overshadowed them, and from the cloud a voice said, "This is my Son, the Beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." Primitive cosmology once held that if ever human beings were to brush shoulders with God's presence on earth, to catch a glimpse of God's hind parts, the place of meeting could only be on the top of a high mountain. The place on earth raised by God the Creator to reach toward the heavens. Cathedrals proclaim as much with their vaulted ceilings and flying buttresses. So too our everyday speech assumes this three-story universe in Scripture, with heaven above and Hades below. Yet as we are more taken with black holes in a distant galaxy, or read even this week of another solar system not so far away and likely populated with even more aliens to dread, as if we had not manufactured enough on this planet, these high places in Scripture have been bested, the heavens emptied of God's real presence. Facts, science, astonishes us now, rather than the holy, holy, holy God, though even facts are losing their luster, it seems. In these latter days of death's apparent dominion over the eternity of love for which we were made, we declare So Luther speaks first of the first commandment in terms of what it means to have a God, of the heart and its trusts. The second for Luther reads, "You shall not go about with the name of God as though it made no difference." And the third, he hears God's command to make a day of celebration holy. There is delight running through these admonitions, delight of one who has beheld God's glory. Similarly, Calvin speaks of the third use of the law as that which helps guide us toward a life lived in gratitude and joyful response to God's grace revealed in Jesus Christ. "For what would be less lovable," he writes, "than the law, if with importuning and threatening alone, it troubled souls through fear and distressed them through fright?" Such an understanding of Sinai has readied us to climb the second mountain of the morning, the Mount of Transfiguration, where the light of God's glory in the face of Jesus Christ cannot be missed, where the law is perfectly fulfilled in the Son's self-emptying love. The Transfiguration, for one bright, shining moment, reveals to human eyes the Father's complete giving of the light of his glory to the Son, a fortnight or so before the Son will yield back to the Father his life on the cross as darkness comes over the whole land. To be transfigured means to be transformed into something more beautiful or elevated. His face shone like the sun, Matthew reports, and his clothes became dazzling white. This is Matthew's description of what God's glory looks like when all you have to look at God with is a pair of eyes. And so it leads me to imagine this morning Jesus through the eyes of God. On this mountain, the Father sees his own glory shining completely in the face of the Son. We, with disciples, see this too. We are seeing nothing less than the triune God's revelation. As I sat for hours looking at him, looking at me, I felt myself being seen by God's Son through the light of his glory shining on me in that sun. His lenses for seeing were not moral or theological. Rather, in his gaze, he saw me better than I am. In all this, Karl Barth says, God's glory is a glory that awakens joy and is itself joyful. But then surely with Augustine's prayers in the back of his mind, Barth suggests that the element in the idea of the glory that we still lack is that of beauty. God's beauty that embraces death as well as life, fear as well as joy, what we might call the ugly as well as what we might call the beautiful. It reveals itself and wills itself to be known, he says, on the road from one to the other. What is at stake in our seeing as God sees is the beauty in his bosom that transforms you and me. Put another way, it is God's delight in something that makes it beautiful. A beauty grounded in divine acceptance, writes my friend David Willis. A person's inherent beauty consists in the fact that she is well-pleasing to God. It is in God's seeing that he is good. This is my son, the beloved, God said on the mountain that day. With him, I am well-pleased. He's beautiful. It has been another week when our common life has been filled with the consequences of our seeing not as God sees, but as human fear and hatred see. Another mosque burned. Two men from India shot in Kansas because they were seen as alien others. Hate crimes against Jews continuing to rise. Heightened tensions in response to a racial slur painted on the garage door of an interfaith family. Transgendered youth returned to a place of insecurity and judgment. Families in hiding for fear of being torn asunder. We see one another through eyes blinded by this deathly moment in human history, not just in this nation, but across the world, that for reasons I cannot fathom, is being ordered by people who take delight in others' destruction. But if what happens to Jesus is in some sense the story of God becoming the God he is, within which story we are also included for love's sake, then on the Mount of Transfiguration, God becomes the God who sees each created creature, not from some fiery distance, but close up. And through the redeeming love of the Son with whom God is well pleased, through the glory of the Beloved who embraced death as well as life, fear as well as joy, the so-called ugly as well as the so-called beautiful, the tragic as well as the comic. This is the God who said, let light shine out of darkness, who has shown in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Therefore, let us more and more become this God's sun